Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Check out my lentils. Nice. Welcome to another... Gonna have to go and look at the video if you listen to this on audio and see what I was pointing at. Welcome to another episode of Rahala Stepper, this week in Leicester once again with the wonderful Grace Petrie. Fascinating chat with her, and I think you're going to enjoy it. If you like these things, why not come and see one live, my friends? What the hell are you doing sitting at home watching it and listening to it, you idiots? Come out to the theatre. We're not doing anything till March and April 2020 as it stands, but I will be in back at the Leicester Square Theatre. These make great Christmas gifts as well, tickets. We're also going to the Birmingham Podcast Festival on March the 28th, and we're in Norwich doing 2 shows in April. Go to richherring.com/gigs. Birmingham and Norwich are selling very, very fast. So book ahead if you want to come and see those. Norwich is nearly sold out. Go to gofaststroke.com and you can buy emergency questions books. You can buy Rahala Stepper Top Trumps. All the money from that will go to funding more podcasts. You can buy my DVDs and my downloads. You can buy stuff from other fantastic comedians as well. Go to richherring.com/gigs or rahalastepper.co.uk. Why not become a member finally? Spend £3 a month and get all those fantastic extras, backstage videos, and just the peace of mind that you are helping us make more podcasts. That's what all your money's going on, just making more content for you. I think 2020 is going to be a big year, my friends. My fan friends. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahala Stepper with Grace Petrie.
It's behind the table.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Haymark Theatre. Unless we came back for a second week. You liked it so much. And look, if it isn't the second week, how come he's wearing different clothes? That there wouldn't be possible. It's Richard Herring. I just twisted my leg. So I'm going to carry on through the pain. I went to my personal trainer. I've got a personal trainer. I did a personal training session earlier today, and that really fucking hurt. And luckily, I'm sitting down mainly. So welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Goers podcast. We just got together the most square people in Leicester. And they're coming to see the theatre, see how they get on. It's another insult to you. genuinely,
someone bought tickets to this show thinking it was at the Leicester Square Theatre. So someone may have got those tickets. I was hanging out at Richard III's tomb earlier today, and the ghost of Richard III came out of the tomb, and after saying it was disgusting that he was buried in the place he was murdered, and that's just insane. He said, that's so offensive to me. I'm from York. Why am I not in York? It's like, it's a punishment to me. People of Leicester disgust me. He said he calls it Relisby. He said, can I have a sandwich? I said, you have to wait half an hour. He said, it's fine, I'm happy to wait. I didn't get too many Leicester fans. I used to like to check the local papers, usually, but in the Leicester Mercury is not amusing. I have to say, the news in Leicester is not an amusing topic. Let's leave that behind. I did find out some facts about Leicester. One fact, in 1841, Thomas Cook created the first package tour from Leicester, which was a train from Leicester to Loughborough, which is... I guess the thinking behind that was we'll send people to the only place in the world that is worse than Leicester so they won't complain about living in Leicester anymore. That is the only thing I can think of. I say that on someone who grew up 160 Leicester Road, Loughborough, I used to live at when I was 4 to 8, near the Ladybird factory. Who remembers the Ladybird Books factory in Loughborough? Yeah, not there anymore, is it? Well, it's there, but it's not a Ladybird Book factory, is it? Trying to give you some local material. So, Loughborough, amazing. It was great in Loughborough. Anyone know my best friend from Cobden School in Loughborough, Satish Patel? Anyone know him? It's weird. It's really difficult to find him on Google. There's a lot of potential people it could be. He's my best friend. If you're out there, Satish, I'd love to see you again. We had great friends. He was a lovely guy. But he's like 52 now. It's hard to believe, isn't it? It's a little boy. He was a little boy. Really can't get my head around time. So, anyway, my guest this week is probably best known for her appearance on The Chase, which is all I'm going to talk to her about. Will you please welcome Grace Petrie, ladies and gentlemen. She's from Leicester. She's one of yours. She's from Leicester. Come in.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank
Good.
You, yes.
This is
you
your...
You The Chase.
Yeah, The Chase.
Yeah, you could have gone for The Weakest Link as well.
You've been on The Weakest Link as well?
Yeah.
Oh, we've got so much to talk about.
I've lost a variety of quiz shows.
You were on The Chase as a civilian, though, not as a celebrity chase.
You're
a civilian chase.
I'm not. Yeah, I don't think I...
You're a celebrity.
Celebrity chase is
now
not available to me, I don't think.
I think it is.
Have you seen
some of the celebrities they have on that thing? I'm quite offended. I've not been asked, and I've been on Tipping Point now.
Have you? Did you find your tipping point?
Not allowed. I was up against a woman from Love Island, I think.
Oh, okay.
And a guy who was in the Crow Road. He's think he's been in something more famous than that. He won Strictly Come Dancing, or whatever it's called.
Okay.
Do you know who I'm talking about? Anyone managed to work that out from those two clues? Well, you wouldn't do very well on The Chase, would you? You might do all right on Tipping Point. They do multiple choices, it's easy. So... Well, how did you get on The Chase? Who was the chaser?
The governess,
okay,
Anne Hegarty. Yeah, got a signed photo of her.
Did you? Good.
Given, didn't ask for. No offence to her. Found it when I was moving house. It's like, what to do with that? Up against the governess, Anne Hegarty, made it to the final chase.
That's okay.
But I did not win any money. But I think the best thing I got out of The Chase...
Yeah.
Was when I was obsessively searching Twitter for people talking about The Chase on the day that I was on The Chase, there was a question about Orange is the New Black.
Right.
And I got it in the final chase, and my teammate, who'd been doing much better than me, didn't know what it was, and I knew what it was. And somebody just tweeted, lol, the gay on The Chase knew the answer to that Orange is the New Black question so fucking quick. And I thought, yeah, I'll take that. The Gay on The Chase.
And so did
the name
he,
of my face. Memoir, actually.
Yeah.
The Gay on The Chase.
Aren't they all? So, what about The Weakest Link? When The Weakest Link has been on for ages.
I was 19.
Wow.
I was foolish.
How far did you get in the weakest link?
Second round.
That's not very good, is it?
But it was a three-way... No, it's not very good. It could arguably scarcely be worse. Only by one round. It was a three-way tie.
Right.
And I wasn't the weakest link, but the guy who had initially voted for... You probably can't even fucking remember how it works, can you? It was ages ago. But the guy who was the strongest link has to decide who gets voted off, and he had initially voted for me. So. Them's the breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get a signed photo of Anne Robinson?
No.
Ah.
No, but I tell you, Bradley Walsh is much nicer than Anne Robinson.
Is he?
Yeah. She didn't talk at all, apart from when the cameras were on.
Yeah, she wasn't very good, I didn't think, at that job.
No.
It was all fed to her. It was clearly fed to her. And if anyone, when you got comedians on, they would talk back at her and she had nothing.
Mm. Although she did say of one of the women who voted me off, which these days I'm much more of a feminist and have more complicated feelings about this, but she said, why Grace? And this woman went to answer and she went, is it because she's younger than you and prettier than you? And I was like, fuck you. Yeah. Yes, Anne. That's it. I think we all know it was.
The other thing I nearly went for was you were the bartender at Sheffield University.
That was my sins. Yeah.
How long did you work at the bar at Sheffield University?
I lived in Sheffield for 3 years, and I was probably there. It was at least a year.
Yeah.
Bartender is like overstating what I did. There was a job called I worked in the club nights, which was between 10 p.m. and like 4 a.m. And there was a job you could do called collect, which was I would go onto the dance floor, the sticky dance floor of the Sheffield Students Union Bar, and I would pick up the discarded plastic glasses that students had had their £1 vodka and coke in.
Wow.
And I volunteered for that job a lot because a lot of those students would just, they'd drop a lot of money on the floor. So the least I ever made in a night was 80 quid.
Wow.
And the most I ever made was 130 quid. I'm talking about like paper money. Not talking about like, you know, coppers.
Wow.
You know.
Sheffield
if
University.
I ever saw anyone dropping it, I'd be like, you've dropped your money. But but most of the time, you just see it on the ground. More fucking money than cents.
That is amazing. And all the student loans and stuff. I suppose you think, well, we're so in debt, we might as well just throw this money away.
It's basically
worthless.
You know.
Let's give it a... And also, you could probably drink any free drinks that were left over just in the... You'd have to drink the dregs.
That's
of the,
it.
And
yeah.
lick the booze off the floor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Probably some peanuts on the floor you
could
eat.
Absolutely, yeah. Money and E. coli, that's what I got out of that, yeah.
So you've got, I mean, it's an interesting career. You've got an interesting job you've got.
That is an interesting career.
It is, but it's, how did it begin? How did the, I'm not that into music, right? And I say, you know, why do you do music? We've got words now. So just do the... If you want to say something, just tell people what it is.
Yeah.
You don't have to sing it.
Yeah.
I'm not in here singing what I want to say, am I? I just say with the words what I want to say.
Yeah.
So that's my first question.
A lot of people would argue I barely sing as well, to be honest. Very little music involved.
I like your stuff because there's lots of words in it.
Thank you.
And they're clever words.
Thank you.
And they're funny words. And you're funny as well as being quite serious about a lot of things as well. What I'd also say, I'll let you talk in a second. People will come to me for my musical opinion. There's a lot of songs that are very sweet and love songs, not necessarily romantic love songs. There's a lovely one about your niece. That's a beautiful, very sweet song. Mm. The Black Tie one we were talking about backstage, which is a beautiful song. It's about sort of longing for the... Well, not longing for the past, like defeating your enemies and well, becoming a better person and being able to tell your teenage self about that. That's a very sweet and moving, beautiful song.
Thank you.
You do a lot of political stuff as well.
Yeah.
How'd you get into all of this singing stuff?
Well, all this singing stuff. I started playing the guitar when I was 13 as a way to impress girls. And it's been 27 years and it's not worked yet, so it certainly didn't work at the time, but I was in a band with three boys at school And we were united only by that being our shared goal, was to impress girls. It was a fucking dreadful band.
And what kind of music was that? Because it's hard to describe. But what was the genre of music of that band?
We thought it was rock.
Right.
but it was probably like, I don't know, a poor man scouting for girls. And that's a poor man, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't that scouting for girls?
That's a bloody poor man. I just sort of kind of always wrote songs, and then I started writing about politics.
Yeah.
In 2010, around about May the 8th, 2010, when we got this fantastic Conservative government came in, and
so you're about 20 then, were you? Or
23, 24. Yeah. So it's funny because it wasn't didn't intend really to be a political artist, and certainly didn't intend to be a protest singer, which is the thing that I get called the most. But I think I just never, like a lot of us, I've never had that much to complain about before that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm white and I'm able-bodied and I'm cisgendered, and I came from a very, very middle-class background where my family certainly were amazing about me being gay, and I never had any issue. I never had any kind of reason to suspect that would ever be an issue. And then in 2010, the government, the Tories got in, and Theresa May famously was made the Home Secretary, and she was made the Minister for Women and Equalities.
Yeah.
Despite not being fond of either, I don't think. And so I wrote a song in response to that, because it was the first time I'd ever really thought, and I actually find it a little bit sort of vulgar now, that how privileged and sheltered a life I've had, that it took me until my early 20s before I was like, I'm actually a minority here, and this, you know, this, the rights that I have as a gay person and as a woman, they weren't always there. People went before me and fought and died for them, and there will always be people trying to take them away. And Theresa May, if you don't know, has voted against LGBT legislation or abstained on it at every opportunity in her career, and certainly had done at the point at which she became Minister for Women and Equalities. And so I had a sort of quite visceral reaction to that. I was like, the person who's in charge of my liberties, actually, as a gay person, is someone who has used her power to be homophobic, and that was the first time I thought, the politics of what's going on can actually affect my life. You know, as a gay person, politics in this country has changed in such a way that affects my actual rights. You know, as a citizen. So I wrote a song, kind of dashed off this song that was like a bit of a political rant. Called Farewell to Welfare, and I didn't think anything of it really. And then the first time I played it at a gig, people started coming up to me and saying, you're a protest singer, and you're like a female Billy Bragg. And then I started sort of getting more into politics, and now I wish I never fucking had. aren't things awful? Yeah, no, I got into it thinking, it's funny, I said I was like 22, 23, and I was like, because it was around that time that we were like, marching loads. The student marches were going on all the time, and we were having occupations. You know, remember we occupied St. Paul's, and I remember thinking like, wow, you know, this is it. My generation is going to save the world, and we didn't. and I thought, you know, I started writing songs, thinking, I'll be able to make my songs. We'll make Britain a better place. Yeah. And I think, if anything, I've made things worse. Yeah. Things are just going worse.
I did Hitler Moustache about the same time, which was about trying to get people to vote and to stop right-wing politics. And that didn't work either. So, you know, it's best just not to do anything. Keep our mouth shut.
I reckon.
Just saw the poster, thought, they're like that. Look, that guy should come back. It was good. we missed him. Basically, Nazism was dead till I brought it back. And I'm delighted about that. But, you know, I think there was quite an apathetic... I mean, maybe I'm an older man looking at it. There was quite an apathetic generation of young people, and I think, like, it's interesting that now that the world... I think things are definitely turning and changing, and that's part of that process of the whole, you know, the the rebellion, the Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah.
You know, that is could be a massive movement. The problem is, you know, kids, young people really feel strongly about stuff, and then, you know, people don't take them seriously necessarily, as we've seen with Greta, and then they get older, and then they have to earn money and things, and you know, so it's a difficult thing to keep that process going, I think, but I think it is changing.
But also, I don't know, like, I'm sort of relentlessly optimistic about things.
You shouldn't be, it's really bad.
I know, yeah, I can't stop. But I mean, it seems to be the case that political engagement, it seems to be much more widespread among children than it was when I was. Yeah. I mean, I remember, like, I sort of marched out of, what a fucking obnoxious little, I marched out of school against the Iraq war, and you know, I was very much in the minority there. You know, I think there was, like, me and about sort of 10 other kids from my school did that. But whereas, like, you know, now they're all, like, walking, you know, it's like widespread school walkouts. There's one tomorrow, isn't there?
There's one tomorrow.
And it seems to be much more, but the stakes are higher, you know, because the world's ending. So I think if you were a kid now, you must be like, well, this isn't, I want to live.
Yeah, well, hopefully, I hope that will come, you know, it may come too late. It's sort of weird. I think with all these things, you get a pendulum swing, and as something's dying, and I think that sort of old school world is dying, but then the death throes of it can make it survive a little bit longer than it would have done. And in this case, it could, you know, that ignoring of all those issues, and basically everything you're talking about, is the problem. But I think it does then, the next generation does then react against that, so the pendulum swings the other way. So if there's time, I think it'll be okay. It's just a question of whether there's time to sort out these problems.
Yeah, that's it. But I think, you know, the backlash that we're seeing now against, like, all manner of social issues that, you know, this, I think in the last kind of 6 to 12 months, the amount of, like, high-profile homophobic attacks and stuff that have been in the press, and the things that people are sort of not allowed to say, but choosing to say about gay people and about trans people and queer people in general, you know, really, I feel like Britain is more homophobic and queerphobic in general than it was 5 years ago. And that's a strange, like, feeling to have,
you know,
because it's just, you sort of see things slipping in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was thinking about this, and I think someone being homophobic, and you see this through lots of different areas, but basically all the people who are homophobic are all dicks. It's basically just the signal. It's just it's the one thing that's consistent between all of them.
Yeah.
Like extreme, you know, ISIS, the Conservative Party. If you took out... They want to basically get rid of all homosexual people, but if you got rid of all the homophobic people...
We'd be having a lovely time,
what a world it would be.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you got rid of all the heterosexual people as well, on top of that, it might even be better.
I'm doing my best.
but I
the
think
gay
that's,
agenda!
I think that's it, you know, I think that's... I mean, if you definitely had the choice, if the emergency question was, would you rather destroy... I know which way you're going on this question, but some of my guests, we'd rather have all homosexual people or homophobic people wiped out. I think the homophobic would be best out of those two. That's just my ideal.
It's pretty edgy of you.
It is pretty edgy.
But hashtag edgy comic.
What a world. Or maybe just 50-50, you know, just random.
50-50 then it would make, each.
Just take, one in two of each of them would go, and then you say to the others, right, just pack it in. Oh, the rest of you will die as well.
Yeah.
And then that'll really confuse everyone.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the homophobic people would be quite glad that half the homosexual people were already dead. But then they go, oh, but I could go next. So, you know, I'm not a politician. I maybe don't have all the answers. It has sort of got... It's sort of got more confusing because, I mean, it's a very... I mean, the trans thing and the gender-neutral thing... I think it's a very hard thing to talk about, right? I tweeted of what I thought was a very blank tweet about it. I thought, just this won't get me into trouble. This is the least thing we can all agree. And then I just got a day of shit from, like, you know, I've had shit from both sides of nearly every argument, I have to say, because people will reading what they want to do. But do you think people are it becomes very difficult to discuss some of these issues because you're afraid of what the reaction will be from either side, you know what I mean? So if you nail your colours to a mast, or even a little bit, then you can get, like, you know, I found it very upsetting, A, that people who are calling themselves feminists could be, like, basically Nazis, and B, that, you know, you're just getting this relentless barrage of stuff. Do you think that's, you know, we want to be able to talk about it, and we want to, aren't we, I think people are afraid of saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And so they don't say anything.
Yeah, I think so. But also, when you say, talk about it, invariably we don't mean talk about it, we mean tweet about it.
Yeah.
And write about it in the newspapers. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I'm not allowed to say anything in my nationally syndicated column in a national newspaper. But I think, like, Twitter is so bad.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm still on it every day. But it's so bad. It's so bad, and I think it's really social media in general. I think it's just like people talk about the effect of it being an echo chamber. But I think the power it has to distort is much bigger, I think, than the power it has to affirm. Because I think, you know, I've had conversations. I've spoken a lot about trans rights and spoken out against transphobia a lot. And a lot of the reason that I have done that is because I felt like I was put in a position where I kind of had to. Because as a lesbian, as a butch lesbian, and someone who talks a lot on stage about being both of those things, a lot of the kind of transphobic argument that was being put across was, in my view, fraudulently sort of claiming to speak for butch lesbians. It was like, oh, you know, trans people are the erasure of butch lesbians, you know, there's roaming groups of trans activists who are going out and they're meeting young lesbians and they're telling them that they're actually trans men, and that is not happening at all. There's no evidence for that whatsoever. But because we still don't actually have very many kind of butch lesbians in positions of sort of public life or whatever, I think it is sort of our responsibility, it's incumbent on us, if we have a platform of any size, I think, to sort of use it to say, well, actually, these people don't speak for me, these people that are claiming that they do speak for me. So I sort of got involved in just saying, I'm not transphobic and don't assume that I am. And it's quite a sad state of affairs, I think, that a lot of trans people were quite relieved. A lot of trans people among my audience were quite relieved, because they were like, oh, you know, these days a lot of butch lesbians seem to be really transphobic, and I don't think that's actually true at all. I think it's just that effect of social media where the loudest voices are saying the craziest things. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the only reason I sort of got involved in talking about it. And I've just had so much shit on the internet.
I bet.
From transphobic, quote-unquote, feminists who are very upset with me for not wanting to oppress trans people. And it's just really, I do find it very disingenuous, because when I have spoken to people in real life, I've had people come up to me at gigs and talk to me in real life and say, well, I'm not sure about this trans thing and this trans stuff, and actually I think, have you thought about this and have you thought about that? And when you actually have a conversation with them, a real conversation where there's a real human being on the other side of the words, and you can see their face reacting, and you can think, oh, this is actually a person that I'm talking to. Surprisingly, you get a lot further with actual dialogue and actual discussion. And I think I've managed to kind of change a few people's minds about it. And you just don't, in my experience, you just don't have that option on Twitter. You know, people are, I'm amazed, constantly amazed, actually, at how little empathy there is there anymore. You know, people straight away just going in for things that you, and I think we're quite quick to dismiss it as trolling. You know, it's like there's, at the moment there's this campaign like, oh, don't feed the trolls, don't engage with the trolls. But trolling is quite a different thing. I think I'm worried about real people who are not trolls, who just actually, when they're typing something out and pressing send, they're saying things to you that they would never say to you in real life.
No.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I think there's a real like empathy deficit there.
Yeah, but it also just, you know, on a subject that you might be like somewhere in the middle or you're not you're confused about it. So if you get like a load of hassle about something really tiny, you think, well, I don't like any of those pricks. You know, I'm going to now completely go the other way. It's a very, so, you know, it's not a good way to argue. It's not a good way to make anyone come around to your point of view to just barrage them with, you know, that's wrong because of this, and, you know. It does. It sort of seems weird to me. I do really love this. The black tie. The song's great. It's got this.
Thank you.
You've got it. And it's
I was
got,
like, mm, it is.
It is. It is.
And it's one of my songs.
If you haven't seen it, it's all. It's, you know, just it's on YouTube and have a look at it. The video's lovely as well. And I think. And I was saying to backstage, I think it's, although it's very much about your experiences, you know, talking to your year 11 self and you know, everything's going to be all right. I think most people at school felt they were some kind of a freak or some or were abnormal in some way, or they thought everyone else was having a great time and they're having a terrible time. It really, you know, I think it's just a very moving song about adolescence and the way we grow up and we accept it. It also does have a fantastic line, a fantastic rhyme, which I'm sure you get sent to you all the time. The images that fucked you were a patriarchal structure. That is a That's a pretty good rhyming couplet,
yeah, thank
I have
you
to
very
say.
Much. Yeah, but I did have a biscuit when I wrote that. I thought, nice one, Petrie.
But you know, it's what you see in the video is you do a ball with.
It's a prom.
Prom.
That's the idea. I mean, that's an American word, obviously, but I wore a dress to my actual prom.
Yes, I wondered.
I was 16, and it was like the worst night of my life. And I just felt all of the normal layers of feeling horrible because you're 16, and that's a horrible thing to be. Sorry if there's any in, but it's a horrible thing to be, isn't it? 16, horrible place to be. And then there was just this awful, this layer of, I just can't describe how uncomfortable I was. It was just dreadful. It was like, yeah, just the worst thing. And it's funny because I take it as a compliment that people kind of say that this song describes quite a universal experience, because I mean that's the hope with it.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, as I was saying to you backstage, like I saw Hannah Gadsby's show Nanette, which if you haven't seen is absolutely incredible, and it's a stand-up show, and she is also a butch lesbian, and she talks a lot about being a butch lesbian and the experience of being a butch lesbian in a world that is not set up for my people. And you know, that changed my life, actually. That show changed the whole way that I see myself on stage and in the world, and it really sort of made me realize that I've been kind of apologizing for myself and apologizing for the way I look, and you know, at gigs I used to start my gigs by saying I had a joke at the top of my gigs that was like the Guardian have called me a powerful songwriting voice, and the Telegraph have called me a whining folk singer, and the EDL have called me a smelly leather, and there's truth in all three. And for years that's how I opened shows. And then I realised, and Hannah Gadsby's got this line in this show where she talks about how being self-deprecating, when you're, it's something to do with self-humiliation on stage, and how she was like, I'm not going to humiliate myself on stage because I realised I was humiliating anyone in the audience who identified with me. And that was an immensely powerful moment for me, because I realised that I have, you know, all my life I've been doing this thing where I have this insecurity about the way that I look and the way that I dress and the presentation that I have. And, you know, I was like 30 when I saw that show. So, you know, I think everyone probably does have this kind of adolescent experience, but I do think those of us who sort of don't look the way that society is set up to expect or want us to look, you know, you just carry it around for much, much longer. Seeing that show was absolutely life-changing for me. And then also turning 30 was a bit of a, I don't know, there's something quite liberating about being like, I can't fucking worry about this anymore. Yeah. You know, I don't know how long I've got left. so I wrote the song as a letter to my teenage self.
Yeah.
And then when it was written, we were like, well, what if we took that idea of this horrible prom experience and actually do something to try and sort of reclaim that experience or like exercise that demon a little bit of that memory. So we rented a hall and I put this call out to sort of like young fans, young listeners. And loads of like queer fans came and it was like loads of girls in tuxedos and like loads of, you know, well, everyone, every possible sort of gender expression you can imagine in every possible kind of clothing. And it was really beautiful. It really, it felt lovely. And then it sort of intercut with scenes of me in a dress.
As you look adult. Really good in that as well. So
yeah,
I mean, you should go back. You should go back to that look.
Yeah, it's well, look. It's funny because my mum, my mum really agrees with you, Richard. And upon viewing the video, indeed texted me so. So really, getting that point home.
But it does, you know, because I think because it is that. I think any teenager has been through something, and I totally take on board what you're saying.
Mm.
But I think then to watch a video of other people who don't have the same experience as you, and I think it just does absolutely bring home, you know, these are just vulnerable young people like you were who want to be themselves, and then there's you being turning that into a massive positive. It's a really fantastic piece of work.
Thank you.
And everyone must see it. And it's got that fantastic line in it as well, as many others as well, I have to say. Anyway.
I just had to do that on Radio 2 last week.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and it was like before the watershed.
Right.
And I was just on Radio 2 last week. No, it's like the only fucking time I've ever been on anything mainstream ever in my life. And they requested that I sing Black Tie.
Right.
I was like, is it got to be Black Tie? Can I sing anything else? Because that line, the images that fucked you are a patriarchal structure, is in the chorus. It's really prominent. And it's funny because I found a tweet that I wrote immediately after I wrote the song saying, I've just written a chorus that contains the line, the images that fucked you are a patriarchal structure. So guess it's goodbye to the mainstream. And then 2 years later, I've got to sing it on fucking Radio 2 before 9 o'clock. So I changed it to the images that struck you, which I think we can all agree makes no sense. Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Right, let's ask you this. Is Leicester as shit as it seems?
Fuck you.
To the casual observer just passing through and seeing it just being really shit. Is it really like
that?
Well,
why don't you ask King Richard III, mate?
I did, and he didn't
He'd rather stay here than in fucking York.
Let me... rather be here with his murderers.
I love Leicester. Absolutely, unironically love Leicester.
Tell me what's the good things about Leicester to make up for my prejudice.
Yeah, all right, I will. You little hot rod. Is that what I mean? Yeah, I don't think so.
I liked it, whatever
it's a
it
car,
was.
Car, isn't it? Yeah. Hothead, Pipsqueak. I don't know what I'm going for. It's got the largest covered outdoor market in Europe.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's got the largest, longest, uninterrupted row of terrace houses. Tudor Road! And then we all killed him. It's got the largest comedy festival outside Edinburgh.
That's true.
And, well... Yeah. I was doing all right, mate. Gary Lineker, Walker's Crisps, Engelbert Humperdinck.
Football, won the football that time.
Football, there was that time. We were good at football for a bit.
I think Leicester...
It was fun.
I think Leicester might have won the Premiership the year that York City got relegated out of the Football League. Yeah. I think that might be the case. Those bones of magic...
Yes. Attenborough Arts Centre, absolutely, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Where tonight I'm promoting a gig that I decided not to go to because you asked me to do this. So that's true, actually. It's been great things for me, this city. Love it. Yeah.
The largest freestanding bit of Roman building. Yeah.
Jewry Wall.
Yeah.
So the front row. So I'm not a tour guide. You know,
I
don't know all of this shit.
I was reading about it in the car on the way up, and then I drove past it, and I was really excited. So Leicester has changed for me.
It's got the oldest gay bar in Britain.
Has it?
Has indeed. Yeah, Dover Castle.
Yeah.
Saw someone get glassed there the other night. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend it at this point in time, but, you know, win some, lose some.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a random emergency question. We did some backstage. Nearly everyone I do this to, I just get just disgusting, rude things come up when I do this. For you, everyone I've asked you so far has been quite philosophical.
Oh.
What is the most beautiful thing you've ever destroyed?
Oh, God.
Have you ever had a...
relationships. Yeah. Most beautiful thing that I've ever destroyed.
You ever smashed a musical instrument in a fit of pique?
I've not, you know.
No.
No, I'm not really rock and roll enough for that. I'm not sure what I've destroyed. This doesn't qualify as beautiful at all.
Okay.
But when I was on my, I was out celebrating my A-level results night, and celebrating was. Not really necessary, but overstating it a bit to have a celebration on those results. But I got pissed, and I thought it would be a really good idea to see if my Nokia 3310 would ring if I put it in a pint.
Okay.
And it did. And then the next day, my phone was fucked.
Oh.
And that's why I didn't do too well in my A-levels, guys. Not a very smart guy. I don't think I've destroyed anything very, very beautiful.
Well, Nokia scientists would be annoyed to hear that you don't consider their phone a beautiful thing. You can play Snake on that.
Are they still alive? I mean, do you still get Nokias?
I think Nokia...
I felled them all with that one act. So
maybe
I did destroy something quite profound.
And if you had to if you could go to any art gallery, museum in the world and take one item and own it, is there anything you would like?
This is the one I was really hoping you wouldn't ask me.
Oh, really?
I thought I got out of this because you've already...
That was last week, though.
When I was here last week watching you interview Jenny Eclair.
It's wearing a different jumper, so, you know, explain that. Explain that. There's no explanation. Yeah.
The two questions you asked her last week were the ones I was hoping you wouldn't ask me.
Okay, that's the other one. I've got the next question lined up.
I don't know fucking anything at all about art.
It doesn't have to be art. It can be anything. It can be like something from the, you know, it can be just like something from a museum of anything, like an artifact. I really like the Lewis chessmen, the chess pieces that were found on the Isle of Lewis. And they're in the Museum of Scotland, I think some of the British Museum. I've got like pretend ones. I mean, they're worth a bit, but they're not like the most valuable thing. But I just would like a real one.
Fair play.
Yeah. So there could be stuff like that.
Yeah.
Could be
I'll go with your answer.
Okay.
I'd like something from the Petrie... This is a real thing.
Yeah.
The Petrie Museum of Egyptian Archaeology.
Okay.
Just because I'm a collector.
Okay.
I want all the things with my name on.
Okay.
I'll take everything out of there. It's my museum. I opened it.
Okay, I didn't know about the peach. But like anything from ancient Egypt would be fucking great. Like having a mummy.
Can I have Tutankhamun's mask?
Yeah.
I'll take that.
You can have everything in there.
Thank God I did year five, eh? Got me out of that hole.
My daughter is four, and she says she wants to be a rock star.
Oh, right.
And she said this morning, she said, are you allowed to do two jobs? And we said yes, and she said, I'd like to be
a
rock star.
Sometimes it's necessary.
I'd like to be a rock star and a teacher, she said. So she's going to be a teaching rock star. What advice would you give to my four-year-old daughter who currently cannot play any musical instruments?
Okay.
In becoming a rock star. Is it a good idea to become a rock star? Would you advise someone to go into that world?
It is what it is, do you know what I mean? I'm very lucky that I get to do what I do. The advice that I would give to anyone embarking on this life is you owe it to yourself to stay in Premier Inns and not Travelodges. There is a world of difference.
There is.
You can back me up on this.
Absolutely, 100% behind you.
The difference in price versus the difference in experience... I'm not, like, working for them, for Premier Inn.
We're sitting in very Premier Inn.
But I fucking would.
These are very
Premier Inn. If Premier Inn wanted to sponsor my... If Premier Inn wanted to sponsor me, yeah. I would renounce my politics in a heartbeat.
Lenny Henry's got it. Sewn up, Lenny Henry.
That's what I'd say, genuinely. Yeah, go for Premier Inn over Travelodge.
It's very good. Yeah. I mean, I've said this many times, but I stayed at Travelodge in Cambridge and there was someone else's bogey on the shower curtain. And that was the moment, and I just pushed the shower curtain away and had a shower. I didn't touch it.
I was on tour with Robin Ince and Joe Long, and we stayed in a Travelodge. I can't remember where it was. I think it was in Hull. And
that is bleak.
You haven't heard the half. And Robin went to his room, Jason went to her room. Their rooms were really near the reception. And mine was like down a corridor and then left and then down another corridor. Ages and ages and ages. It was in like the furthest room away. And the curtains were drawn when I got in because it was after a gig. And I was just like getting ready for bed and stuff. And I just heard this platform four for the 11:34 to... And I opened the curtain and it was on the fucking platform. It was like it was in a train station. And that was like the last train of the night. And if I hadn't heard that, I would have been woken up at like 5 in the morning when all the trains... So I went down to reception and I said, have you got another room? And they were like, yeah, sure, is there a problem? I was like, yeah, it's in a fucking train station. And they were like, yeah. And they had another room. I was like, did you think I just wasn't going to know? So there you go. Premier Inns, guys.
Some people like this.
As Johnny Donohoe says, everything's Premier but the Inn.
Yeah. You could just climb out the window and get your train.
Well, I was driving, mate. So, you know.
Well, let's talk about that because there's been a big crossover with comedy in your... I mean, there's a lot of wit in your songs, but you've been touring with Josie and Robin and you've done a lot of work with the Guilty Feminist podcast.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So how did that come about that you started working
with I don't know. Well, I was... I've sort of started to get somewhere in music, finally, after a lot of long few years of trying and not really getting anywhere. And for a long time, I was like better known in comedy than I was in music. But I'd have to preface every gig with, did you know that I'm not a comedian? Which people always, it's a dreadful thing because you say that and people laugh and they think it's a bit. And then you have to be like, no, I'm not a comedian. And then they look a bit panicked. And that's what happened when
booing.
That's what happened when I was on tour with Josie. But I think, so I met Josie at Glastonbury in 2010, and like I said, the government had just changed, and I'd just written this song about it, and I was sort of doing political stuff. We were both on Billy Bragg's Left Field stage, and we just got on, and she's great, isn't she? And she brought me on tour with her, and I think Robin saw me at the same gig, so she brought me on tour sort of, I think, that year, and he brought me on tour the next year. And then I just kind of started... I would never describe what I do as comedy at all. But because it's so different playing to stand-up audiences versus playing to music audiences, especially at that point in my career when I was really just doing like quite noisy pub shows where you're just used to people kind of talking over you and you really got to sort of work to get everyone's attention. And then when I was touring with Josie, you know, went out there, obviously it was like a theatre, it was just like this, went out and she introduced me and I came on stage and everyone just sat there, you know, arms folded, just listening very politely. And I wasn't used to it at all. And I just did my songs and to use what I believe to be a comedy parlance, I died on my arse. And they absolutely hated it. And I'll never forget, there was a guy in the front row and he just, like, the moment I came out with the guitar, he just folded his arms, looked really uncomfortable and never stopped looking uncomfortable for the whole thing. So the next night, I just tried to sort of tell a joke before I did anything. And there was, I could feel this real, like, audible sigh of relief from the audience because they were, I think, obviously, you know, I sort of come out and I'm obviously like a lesbian with an acoustic guitar and Doc Martens and you know, I think they thought I was going to fucking burn my bra on stage or something. So, and I was going on and about social justice, never stop banging on about social justice. So, and I think that, you know, like there's a bit of a stereotype that could be quite humorless and quite worthy. So I think stand-up audiences, you get a lot more from them if you just can kind of go, just put them at ease by saying, I'm not taking myself too seriously. Like, I am going to talk about austerity and I'm going to talk about homophobia and I'm going to talk about all these really heavy topics. But, like, you know, the overall aim is to entertain you, yeah, ultimately. So I started doing that. And then by the end of the tour, we were on tour together for 3 months. And by the end of the tour, I got quite comfortable kind of talking to an audience. And now I've just been very, very, very fortunate that I've got a little bit of a foot in both camps because, yeah, I think for a lot of years, the sort of level that I was working at, I wouldn't have been able to make a living from either music gigs or comedy gigs, but I was kind of doing enough of both to sort, yeah, of keep me afloat. So, yeah, I think I'm like sort of funny for a musician and I'm sort of a good singer for a stand-up. Yeah,
well, a lot of the 70s
the Lib Dems of entertainment, if you will. What a thing I just called myself.
But that was in the 70s. That was, I mean, that's sort of where a lot of the, I mean, Billy Connolly and Mike Harding,
sure,
I mean, the stand-up bits got longer and the music got shorter. I don't think they're necessarily as good as musicians as you, but it was. I mean, they were still good, but yeah, it's an interesting way to go. And do you feel? Because I get a sense that you feel you don't kind of fit into any kind of genre, yeah, or anything you're doing with your music. I remember, I thought there was a lovely thing about saying that, you know, you're doing politics in folk music. It's fine if you're doing about the peasants' revolt, but they don't want to hear about politics.
Absolutely,
now.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so presumably whoever did those folk songs about the Peasants' Revolt was hated at the time.
Yeah.
Shut about the Peasants' Revolt, mate. Yeah. Talk about 1066. Come, yeah, on.
They weren't nominated for any folk awards either.
So, yeah, but is that a good thing to not fit into, like, to be a bit of a square peg, I suppose?
I'm starting to feel like it, yeah, is, yeah. I think that I'm very, very lucky to have lived in the time that I live in because, you know, talking about making your own work, you know, I think that because I lived in an age with the internet, I can just publish my own work. I can record my own stuff and I can release it basically without the industry. I've never really had anything to do with the music industry and the music industry has never really had anything to do with me. And, you know, somebody like me 20 years ago, I'm sure, wouldn't have had a career because, you know, in music, certainly, I think it for such a long time, it was such a small group of people who were just tastemakers who just had all the power.
Yeah.
And just, you know, they used to be sort of compared with what we have now, I think there used to be so much of a reduced number of acts who were allowed to sort of be big and be successful. And, you know, it was such a small group of people that was choosing who that was going to be. And I have never needed anyone's permission to, you know, and that's what I think is really beautiful about being able to find your own audience with the internet and having this incredible tool where we can just make our work and put it out there, and you know, you'll find your tribe, you know, you'll find the people who like what you do. And you know, the world's a big fucking place, you know, and there's most of it's on the internet, and they'll find, you know, enough of them will find what you're doing to kind of keep you afloat. And that, you know, now I'm at this point, I wouldn't have done it any other way. You know, when I was sort of in my early 20s, the thing that I was desperately, you know, aiming for and hoping for was to get a record deal. That's desperately what I wanted, to get signed and get a record deal. And I've never had a record deal. I've never had any, no one's even threatened a record deal in my direction. But now I'm really grateful for the way that it's gone, because nobody has ever had any creative control over what I'm doing apart from me. I've never had anybody saying, you know, like, can you make it a bit less, you know, gay or a bit less, you know, whatever it might be. You know, and it's funny because, you know, Black Tie, to me, writing that song was such a sort of niche experience. I thought it was such a kind of specific story just about my life. And when I wrote it, I thought, you know, it meant a lot to me, but I thought, well, I can't imagine this is really going to do very well. And it's been like the most commercially successful thing that I've ever done, which is funny, because I do think, you know, when I think about 20 years ago when it was just record execs with big cigars, you know, going, hey, kid, I'm going to make you a star. I think, like, I am assuming, but I think if somebody like me had gone to those people and said, I've written a song about the experience of being a butch lesbian in a patriarchal society, I don't think they would have gone, it's a hit! We've got a hit on our hands! But, you know, so I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to sort of be whatever you want. And you know, increasingly, I think in the like streaming world, you know, we're so obsessed with categorizing things into genres, and I've had a kind of weird time. I mean, I sort of call myself a folk singer, but I absolutely appreciate that most of the folk world considers that to be insulting to their work, because folk has got a lot of kind of traditional roots, which I'm not really a part of any of that. Everything I do is contemporary. I've been sort of accused of being like a punk singer at points. I've been accused of being, you know, comedic, whatever. And I think, like I said, it's been nice to have a foot in a few different camps, like a spider, and be able to kind of pull enough people from all of those kind of weird and wonderful worlds to be able to just have this. But it does mean that my own audience, when I do my headline shows, I always say that my audience, because of that, because I've worked in so many different genres, my audience is a bit like that game you play where somebody draws a head and then you fold over the paper and pass it on to someone else, and someone else draws a body and then you fold it over and someone else draws the legs. It's sort of I have no sort of ideal demographic. But I think that's amazing. I think that's lovely.
It is. And it's the same thing, I think, about, you know, that when it is someone making a decision saying, oh, will people want this? Will ever, you know, actually, people want to hear about other people's experiences, and people, you know, and actually, that's interesting. If anything's bringing the world together when it's being torn apart, is actually if you get to view someone else's life and, like you say, see them as another person and be able to listen to what they're saying, it's sort of interesting to know about someone else's culture or someone else's, you know, someone from another country or someone with a different way of looking at the world from you, or a different, you know, different internal mechanism to you. And so, you know, people are. I think it brings people together, you know.
Definitely, and finding the, you know, like, when art is good, when it's just universally good, you know, that it just transcends all of that, I think. And, you know, I mean, I'm just going on about Hannah Gadsby like a fangirl, but, you know, that show has just gone incredible. It's taken over the world.
Yeah.
You know, she just won an Emmy for it last week.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I think that is interesting that, you know, something like that, a story like that told by somebody like her, which is just maybe not something that, because for such a long time, I think most of the experience that we were seeing reflected anywhere in culture was kind of overwhelmingly straight and overwhelmingly white. I mean, a lot of it is still overwhelmingly white and overwhelmingly able-bodied and cisgender and all kinds of things. But now, you know, seeing a story like hers and actually saying, well, look how well received that's been. Look how much, how successful that's been, how much it's taken over the world. And actually, maybe it's not such a fucking risk to put somebody on TV who doesn't look like everyone else who's ever been on TV. Because if it's good, it's clearly not only butch lesbians that's seeing her show. You know, it's not, I don't think the Emmys are decided by the Confederation of Butch Lesbians. Do you know what I mean? I think other people must have clearly liked it and thought it was good for it to do so well.
Sure. Well, you know, that's the, hopefully that's the good side of the internet, hopefully. Hopefully it's, you know, you find your audience and then the audience can find you as well. And it's, you know, it is interesting. So you are on tour. You're coming to, I'll mention you're coming to...
I'm coming to this very
very theatre.
Yes.
On the 22nd of May 2020.
Yeah, it's a long time
ago. You might,
yeah.
Who knows if we'll still be here then.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if post-Brexit, Leicester's the first place that's going, I tell you. That's, they're not going to... They're not sending any resources here. There'll be no medicine. The zombie apocalypse will be...
I know.
I mean, at least you'll be used to it.
If we're spared,
Leicester might be the one that flourishes.
Yeah.
Just having lived this in this terrible situation and then the rest of us won't be able to cope. Leicester go, what's wrong? It's slightly better than it was.
I don't have to take this.
You don't. Look, it's been fantastic to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show. And Leicester should be very proud to have done one good thing. Having created you. Ladies and gentlemen, Grace Beattie. Thanks so much. Thank you. Thanks so much for coming. Tell your friends I'll be up there somewhere after the show. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Grace Beattie. Thank you to Pest for providing this music, as always. It's kind of them. They're good-hearted folk. Despite their nasty name, they sound like they're going to be an irritant. No, if anything, quite the opposite. I would also like to thank everyone at the Haymarket Theatre in Leicester. You were lovely. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Stripe. Chris Evans, not that one's the main guy, but his son Ben's a good guy too. So are all the crazy Welsh misfits who help him out from now time to time, filming and whatnot. Thank you very much to everyone at Acast and the British Comedy Guide who have been very supportive over the last few months and years. I'm indebted to my producer on this show, who was, of course, I don't need to tell you, the wonderful James Hingley. My executive producer, more importantly, was Michael Butler. Thank you for some fantastic notes. And thank you to the series producer, of course, Ben Walker. This is a fuzz, gofasterstripe.com and gofasterstripe.com and Sky Potato and Fuzz and Sky Potato production for the internet. If you've enjoyed this, go to rahalastapa.co.uk to find out more, become a member, go to richhome.com/gigs, go to gofasterstripe.com, all the usual places. Help us out with a little kickback if you like this start kind of thing. Or don't, just tell your friends about the podcast. That'll do, if you like it. If you don't like it, tell your friends as well, because they're probably idiots as well, so I don't want them listening. All right, see you later. Love you. Looking forward to Christmas. Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.